Kristen Sandifer, and today we have a really, really exciting podcast for you. I'd like to welcome Paul Roberts, who he is an author, a renowned journalist, and paranormal for Halo Paranormal Investigations. So, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Kristen. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, absolutely. Now, so you and your wife, Deanna, work together?
Right. My wife, Deanna Jaxine Stinson, she's also too an author, and you can Google her and see all kinds of books, but she's our psychic medium, and she's the co-owner of Halo Paranormal Investigations, and we've done something like 1,000 investigations.
Wow. What got you into the paranormal? How did you...
Well, when I was a child, I lived on a house on Effie Street, and just so many things were happening to me. All the entities in this home, they were centered on me. They weren't centered on my parents. They weren't centered on my siblings, but they were centered on me. And some of the things that happened there is like I could hear a female voice out my bedroom window, and she would say, and she would call me by my middle name because everybody was calling me Dale. Yeah, she would say, "Dale, come here. Dale, come here." And she was enticing me to go into the orange grove. But some of the things, and I'll just cut it real short, but I was thrown into a heater. I had this strange creature that kind of looked like a black tea kettle, and it had a snout, and the snout turned towards me and sprayed this terrible mist, and the next day I had bronchitis. And then, yeah. And then I had these crazy, like, skull heads that flew around the house and everything. I mean, I was seeing all this crazy stuff. And then my mother came in, and I was hacking a coffin, and she accidentally gave me poison instead of cough medicine. So it was like they're trying to get rid of me. So as I got older, I was wondering, I said, was that childhood nightmares? Was I having night terrors? Or did I actually experience the paranormal? Then I just started reading books on the paranormal. I got into military intelligence. I was in CID, Criminal Investigation Division, in the Army. So a lot of things led me down the path to become a paranormal investigator.
That's very interesting. I kind of went a similar path. You know, I've been experiencing since I was 4 years old, and I did my internship for the state of Texas parole, and I wanted to go into the FBI at one point and work in criminal investigations. But I sort of saw that side of things, and I was like, maybe not. Maybe this isn't for me. But I went a different route with it. But did you get the feeling that, I mean, you were scared when you were a kid? Did it terrify you?
Terrified me. Absolutely terrified me. Now, in fact, they call me the demon warrior because I'll take on demonic cases, and a lot of your ghost hunting groups will not take the demonic cases. And my wife and I, we do cleansings. I do a Roman Catholic house blessing, and she does a metaphysical type cleansing. So we go after them. I mean, we're not afraid or anything else, so...
So what do you think, and I know this is going to be a question I'm going to get from a lot of my listeners, what's good and what's evil? What is truly evil? I mean, does the devil exist? What's your take on that?
Okay. Well, okay, let's say you're just walking into a haunted house. Mm-hmm. And I'll ask the occupant, I said, okay, well, tell me some of the things that this entity does. And they'll say, well, it moves the 7-Up bottle across the table, and it does this and it does that. I said, do you feel a threat? No, because all they're doing is doing maybe some mischievous things. They just want some attention. But when I ask an occupant, is there a threat? And they say something like, yeah, it landed on my chest and was sucking out my breath. It pushed me around. It scratched me. There you have bad intent. And that bad intent is basically the beginning of something evil.
Okay. Now, what about, you know, certain places can have like a jail, let's say, that had experienced a lot of trauma and a lot of people were tortured there. Can't there be an echo of all of that past trauma there that kind of almost develops into an entity almost that can sort of, under the guise of, you know, almost act like a poltergeist?
Right. That's like, there's a lot of residual energy. Mm-hmm. It could be negative. It could be positive. And that negative energy will replay itself over and over again in the atmosphere. And there's cases of what is called living ghosts. And living ghosts, in 1974, Chicago, Illinois, this couple, they moved into this home and they would see a man manifest. And it would walk over to the couch and then a woman would manifest. And then the ghostly man would start slapping the woman violently. And then it would just sort of fade out. Well, they saw this several times. And it happened around about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. And then they went to a block party. And the host says, oh, this is a tradition. We do this every year, blah, blah, blah. Take a look at our photo albums. And you'll see some of our past events at this block party. So they were looking through the photos, and then the woman, she gets all excited. She goes, oh, my God, those are the ghosts in my house. And the guy looks at the picture and goes, ghosts? Oh, my God, they did live in your house. They were always having domestic violence over there, domestic disputes. The police were there all the time. They got a divorce. He moved out of state, and she moved 5 blocks down the road. I still see her. They're not ghosts. They're still alive. But that's a case of living ghosts. You can create your own ghost by doing something very positive, and you're so happy, like you're in Disneyland. Oh, I'm so excited, you know. And you can leave that residual energy of being so happy that you're going to Disneyland. Or you can leave some negative energy because you're shouting at your boss and you're calling them all kinds of names and everything else, and you're frustrated and you're mad. And now you're leaving negative energy in the atmosphere, and that's a living ghost.
And so that just stays there until it gets cleansed out, right?
Exactly. So, exactly. Right.
Why do you think that not all people can see ghosts, demons, spirits? Humanoids, aliens, the whole thing.
Well, they just basically, you're opening up your third eye. You're embracing that stuff. You're letting it in. And I don't know. I think I have some walls that are kind of put up. Things are kind of closed up. And that's why I don't really consider myself a psychic. Because I just kind of don't allow them to enter my esoteric frame. But my wife, like, she's very open to it. Her mind is open to it. Her third eye is open to it. And she actually sees ghosts. Sometimes ghosts communicate with her. She's like a lighthouse. And they're interested in that light beam that's coming from that lighthouse, and they're attracted to her, and they got a message to convey to her, and that's what they do.
Yep, yeah, that makes sense. I also believe it's kind of like a skill. You have to. It's like anything else. If you want to learn to be a great runner, you can't just, you know, you got to get out there and do it every day and live and breathe running. You know, if you want to go to the Olympics, you know, you gotta do that, and you gotta practice it every day and things like that. That's at least been my journey. I know some people just are naturally gifted with it, and they don't have to work at it too hard anyways. I'm always jealous of them, but.
Yeah.
Well, what was your first experience in paranormal investigations that really scared you, that kind of maybe shook you up?
Well, at one point in time, Kristen, I was like ready to give up. I said, okay, sure, we get some EVPs, but that could be a voice from another room. You know, and orbs. Orbs can be almost anything. It could be dust. It could be skin flakes. It could be dew drops. It could be light refractions, whatever. But it was just, I was about ready to give up. And I almost came to the point where, okay, I'm not believing in ghosts. I'm not believing in the afterlife. But I went into this house in Citrus Heights, and we had 15 scouts. And scouts are paranormal investigators in training. So I had five in one room, five in another room, and five in another room. Well, 10 of them were falling asleep in the two rooms because nothing was happening. They were bored to death. And then I look into the other bedroom, and I can hear a little girl giggling. Well, mind you, there's five guys in there, and they're recording, they're filming, and it's not them giggling. It's actually a little girl. And I looked at them, and I said, hey, can you hear that? They go, yeah, we're recording it too. And I hear her giggle again. I said, well, she must be about 3 feet in front of me, sitting on the corner of this bed. I can't see her, but I know she's there because that's where the giggle is coming from. And I hear the giggle again. I put my head down to where the giggle was, and I said, hello. And she says back to me, hello. And I said, oh, my God. I can't believe it. You know, yeah. I became an instant believer at that very point of time. I said, the afterlife exists, ghosts exist, and I got all 15 people in that room. And just all kinds of crazy things was happening in that bedroom. Nothing was happening in the other bedrooms, but everything was happening in this bedroom. The walls, there was knockings on the walls. The walls sounded like they're being ripped apart. It sounded like the Cenobites from Hellraiser, the movie. Oh, wow. We had three walkie-talkies on the floor. And they're all on the same channel. One turns on, and it's a man's voice, and he goes, get out! Well, two times the scouts ran out the door, and that was one of them. And finally, the occupant of the house, she goes, Paul, she goes, I have to live here. Why don't you send them home? You're welcome to spend the night in this bedroom. I go, okay. So I sent them all home, spent the night in the bedroom. Video camera was running, and there was a little tap on the headboard. There was a woman voice saying, Paul, Paul, Paul. And there was a man's voice mumbling, and there was a little boy at the foot of the bed, and he sounded like he was moaning. Well, it was caught on videotape, but I slept through the whole thing.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Wow. And did you resolve that case? Were you able to figure out, was it a family member or a couple family members? Or?
Oh, well, the house was built over a Japanese internment camp. Oh. And the Japanese internment camp had a lot of, they had torture, they had suicides, mm-hmm. they had murders. They just had everything going on. So it looked like one of our psychic mediums said it looked like the female was Japanese and the man was American. And so they think maybe it was previous owners or maybe it's something with the land because it was a Japanese internment camp there.
Okay. Were you guys able to get it to stop? Did you have a priest come out to bless it or?
Oh, no. The lady that lives there, she was actually happy with her ghost. She doesn't want them to go. And I was like, okay. To each his own, you know.
Have you participated in an exorcism before?
What I do, and this is a basic form of exorcism. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say I go to a house and they said, I feel like I have an attachment. And this thing's demonic. I'm being scratched and things are happening. And it's very, very negative. And even like when you walk into the house, the air is thick and everything else, right?
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of people don't realize this, but okay, if you have an attachment and we provide this service to get a full submersion baptism, and I actually do it because a lot of times they go to their priest and the priest say, oh, well, we're not doing it, blah, blah, blah.
Or the Catholic Church will just ignore you entirely.
Yeah.
We don't perform
yeah.
those. Uh-huh, sure.
Yeah, so I absolutely do it. So I tell them, go ahead and start running the water. They get the water going, and it's nice and warm. I put some holy water in it. My wife and I, we pray in the water. We pray over the water. And then we take the person and we fully submerge them into that water. Mm-hmm. And I would say about 98% of my cases where we have attachments, the people say the attachment is gone. Because a full submersion baptism is a basic form of exorcism. Yeah.
Have you gone on with you before, come up to the investigations with you to help out, or do you not typically, do you guys just work alone?
Oh, no, no. We have a full team. I mean, in one investigation we just had recently, which was a UFO ghost cryptid investigation, we had 15. We had
cryptid.
Okay. Oh yeah.
You're gonna have to explain that one to me.
Oh, okay. Supposedly, some type of humanoid creature is seen on their property, and they have 25 acres of land.
Okay.
And that was in Wilton, California.
Yeah.
Yeah, 25 acres of land.
I think I might have heard about this. What was it? What did the creature look like?
They said it was a skinwalker. So the creature has the features of a horse, but the body of a man.
Yeah, those have been reported in Utah as well, where I used to live. There's actually Skinwalker Ranch.
I investigated Skinwalker Ranch.
Did you? I've always wanted to go out there, but I've been interested in chicken.
I did Area 51, my most memorable ones are Area 51, Skinwalker Ranch.
Did you do Area 52, Dugway Program?
No, I didn't do that.
That one's in Utah. That one's pretty interesting.
Well, yeah, I would love to do that one. I did the Bridge over River Kwai in Thailand.
Wow.
I did Stonehenge, and I did Bath, England.
Did you have anything interesting come up at Stonehenge, or because I have a very strong connection with Stonehenge too. I feel like, you know, from that past life, but.
Well, one person, they took some dowsing rods and they pointed it to Stonehenge and they got an electrical charge back. Well, I brought my dowsing rods to see if that would happen. It didn't happen. Did anything mystical happen to me there?
Mm-hmm.
Not really. I thought something would happen, but I was just totally fascinated with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but nothing happened really.
Why do you believe that some people are targeted by demons and some people aren't? And I know we kind of talked about this before we started recording, that spiritual protection, you know, is important. But what do you think other than that? Why do some people?
Well, according to demonology, they said there's three things that attracts demons to a human. One, a person who's a drug abuser. Two, a person who uses a lot of alcohol, is an alcoholic. Three, a person who has some mental issues. And those are like weak links in the chain link fence, and the demons will attack that.
Well, because it's like you give up the right to your sovereignty as a human, right?
Right.
When you use substances. So.
And then also, too, if you're doing crazy stuff where you're trying to summon demons, you're going to wind up getting a demon.
You mean while under the influence and stuff?
Yeah. I believe, and this is my theory, but I believe that in some of my cases where the person didn't have any kind of mental illness, wasn't an alcoholic, wasn't a drug abuser, but they were like a normal person, but they were curious and they were playing with the Ouija board and summoning up demons, and they actually summoned up a demon. So,
I think why that happens with the Ouija board, because I get this a lot by my students and by my listeners.
Yeah. Well, it's an ancient device, even though you have a modern toy company creating them. It's still is an ancient device, and it's that ancient device became a toy that everybody can utilize if they want to. And from somewhere, like in the Library of Alexandria, before they burned up all the books and everything else, that information on why you can summon entities with the Ouija board, that information is lost. But it's information that's been passed on word to mouth,
right,
on that you can summon up entities, but it has to do with some kind of ancient knowledge. That ancient knowledge is with the Ouija board. The Ouija board continues on to this day, and it's created by these toy companies.
I know. I think that's crazy. I mean, even though, you know, I'm a psychic, I won't mess with Ouija boards, because what I believe, and this is what I was told by a teacher of mine, is that you have to know who you're summoning or invoking. You're wanting to speak to a specific person. Otherwise, you're putting a call out there basically to anybody, you know, and anybody can answer back. And it's usually the people that are not so good, maybe, you know, or were not so good in a previous life, that are going to answer, you know, because they've got nothing better to do with you. So that's why, because you're just calling, you know, calling out to the, you know, to the dead, and basically you don't know who you're calling. So that's why it, you know, gets dangerous. So that's what I was told anyway. So that's why I don't.
Yeah. And Kirsten, you know, it's so funny, as being a paranormal investigator, my wife and I would get a lot of pictures and videos of people who send us pictures of orbs. And I tell them, like, orbs can be almost anything. But you know how we actually deem a orb as being paranormal?
Yeah.
It's like when we go to an investigation, is we try to show, okay, let's say I see an orb moving around. Mm-hmm. And I said, God, that looks like the same orb. It's coming back around again. So what I'll do is I'll place my hand up against the wall, and I'll tell one of my investigators, maybe two of my investigators with two cameras, to take a picture of my hand. So I'll say something to the orb. I'll say, okay, I see this orb floating around, okay? Appear by my hand. Appear by my hand if you're listening to me. And there's been a lot of times where we'll get a picture and we command the orb to appear by the hand. That shows intelligent movement. And in one of our cases, this guy was at this house where the ghost was named Emily, and she's known to drain energy from the occupants. So the investigator looks at me and goes, Paul, I need to sit down. I feel very drained. I said, maybe Emily's doing that to you. So I said, Emily, if you're listening to me, I said, if you like this guy, I said, kiss him on the lips. Emily, kiss him on the lips. And we have three investigators with three cameras. We snap a photo, and guess what? We have an orb on his mouth.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. That showed intelligent movement. And then we said, Emily, sit on his lap. And the orb is hovering over his lap. That's intelligent movement. That is something I can deem as paranormal. So, oh yeah, you can use any camera will work. And then we have what is called designer orbs. And designer orbs, I know you've seen them. They're the ones that have all the intricate type designs inside of it. It's almost like a snowflake. Not one is the same. And we were at a case. It was over in Del Paso Heights. And I took some pictures, and I got these two designer orbs, and I enhanced the photos. I made them bigger. Mm-hmm. And what I saw was what looks like dog faces. And so I went back to the occupant, and I said, what do you have in your backyard? And she goes, I have an orange grove. And I go, okay, well, besides that, and she goes, well, I have two dogs buried back there. I go, really?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and I said, you know what? Take a look at these photos and tell me what you see. So she's looking at the photos, and she starts crying. I go, why are you crying? And she goes, those are my dogs in the orbs. And I go, those are your dogs? She goes, that's their faces. I go, wow. So something like, yeah, if the occupant's recognizing her dogs in the orbs, mm-hmm. I deem that as paranormal.
Well, something interesting, and maybe you can kind of clue this up for me a little bit, but I do some remote viewing. And sometimes when I'm doing remote viewing, I will see a blue orb out of the corner of my eye. And I could, and it's happened so many times that I just, it's, you know, it's too strange to just, you know, be for me to just dismiss it. And then I've had this come to me in my dreams. You know, my guides were telling me that it's because I'm remote viewing, I'm putting myself somewhere in a different position. So that's actually me in the, in, you know, in a different dimension, I guess. So, That's what I was told by my guides on that. So I don't know what your take is on it, but.
You know, when it comes to things like that, usually my wife, who's the metaphysical one, mm-hmm. she usually has the better answer. I'm more like on the history stuff, but what I know about blue orbs, that is a calming effect. Blue is calming.
Yep.
So I know a blue orb is a good thing. You know, versus, let's say, a black, dark orb. Like this woman, she committed suicide at the Sacramento River. And so we were at the location, and one of the investigators takes a photo, and there's a black orb hovering over the Sacramento River. And that shows a sign of depression, of sadness, and everything else. But a blue orb, hey, you know, if you got a blue orb going on in your life, that's a good thing because that's a calming effect, peaceful, and everything else. And that's what I've been told about blue orbs.
I feel that too. When I'm doing, I feel always very calm and supported by my guides and helpful. But it's interesting that you said that about the black orbs because there's sometimes when I will get in a situation, you know, somewhere and I've seen like a black orb and just felt this like, it almost feels like there's a bunch of weight on you. And then come to find out like somebody killed themselves there or there's a terrible accident, you know, where many people were killed. And that's happened to me a few times, you know, with the black orb thing. So.
Yeah.
Kind of on that, do you think that homes and inanimate objects can be cursed or even possessed? Like, you know, in the, was the Conjuring the doll?
Oh, absolutely. We were actually involved in the Poltergeist movie curse.
Really?
Yeah, we were on the documentary on the Reels channel, Case Closed with AJ Benza.
Uh-huh.
And this family had purchased, I can't think of the main actress in that Poltergeist movie.
The little blonde girl, yeah.
Yeah, the little blonde girl. But I guess she had another cursed doll, and they purchased it through eBay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually certified, and then all kinds of bad things were happening to them. I mean, bad things that, like financially, bad things with the house breaking down, bad things of them getting sick, getting ill, someone in their family almost dying, someone in their family actually dying. So it was just like one thing after another, and they called us, and we blessed the doll and everything else. And of course, myself, my wife and I were journalists with Costa Rica Times. So Hollywood, they picked up on the story. They contacted us, and they had us on Case Closed with AJ Benza, and we talked about it. But, objects? Yeah, definitely. That's my little dog story. Yeah, he's psychic. We'll take him to the cemetery and he'll chase things and go, what are you chasing, Story? And he'll be chasing nothingness, and it's like, are you seeing a ghost? You know, so, yeah, I think he's psychic. But anyway, definitely, you know, objects, you know, things that you touch, because you're like, if I have a wristwatch, that energy from my body is going to be surrounding that wristwatch. It's going to stay with that wristwatch. So if I die, or, well, maybe I'm still living, and you purchase my wristwatch, you buy it, or someone gives it to you or something, you're going to carry my energy. So, and that energy gets stronger after death. And it's like, there's one theory, and I've always believed in, if you leave a little part of yourself all over the world, and I'm a world traveler, I've been to like 59 countries. I always try to leave a little bit of myself. And they said, if you leave a little bit of yourself all over the world, you'll have the ability as a ghost to go to all those areas where you left a little bit of yourself.
Oh, I hadn't heard that, but I'd heard that if you leave a little bit of yourself, that you are protected by the ghosts of that, you know, the spirits of that region if you do that. So, interesting. Yeah, I've heard something similar about that, but that's very cool.
Yeah.
What sort of tools do you guys use when you go on your investigations? Do you use, like, magnometers? Do you use,
well, you know,
air boxes?
With all my investigators, and this is the good thing, when you have a lot of investigators, they have a lot of their own equipment. So we use night vision goggles. We use digital recorders for EVPs. We have sound enhancers. So if we capture an EVP, we can make it louder, you know, on the spot. And what we always practice is that we try to show evidence on the spot to the occupants. We don't go home and spend hours listening to the evidence. Okay, like when I get in, do an EVP, and I get kind of off track sometimes, but anyway, when I do an EVP, I do what is called a quick and dirty.
Okay.
And a quick and dirty is, I'll say something small. I'll say, if there's somebody here, talk to me. I pause, I give it time to talk, and I play it back. And I'm telling you, Kristen, is so many times right on the spot, I'll get an EVP. So I'll say, is there anybody here? And it'll say, I'm right here. And then everybody's astonished because I'm doing it right in front of them and doing it quick and dirty and getting an EVP. And
what do you record here?
What's that?
What do you use
your EVPs? I just use a simple digital recorder. But I'll have my sound enhancer there, so I'll hook it up, and I can play it for the audience who's all there. If there's 15 people, they're all going to hear it. So, but we use a lot of things. We use portals. We use the Kinect, you know, with those little stick figures. That Ghost Adventures does. And, I don't know if you've seen the episode, but Crisis in Oakdale, my wife and I are on that Ghost Adventures episode.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't seen that one? Okay. And I could tell you a couple stories about Zach, and you would just bust up laughing. But anyway.
Wait, is that the one that he's got the dark hair. I used to watch his show a lot. Did he get arrested or something happened recently? Like,
oh no, you're thinking of the other guy. You're thinking Paranormal State.
Yes, Paranormal State.
Yeah, he got in trouble. Ghost Adventures. You have Zach Bagans, but
Okay. Now I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Can I tell you a Zach story?
Sure.
Okay, you'll crack up. Okay, this is crazy. Okay, when I first had my first encounter with Ghost Adventures, they read my article about the National Hotel being haunted in Jackson, California. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they said, we're going to give you Zach's cell number. And when you arrive at the National Hotel in Jackson, call him, let him know that you're there, and meet him in the lobby. I said, okay, yeah, sure. And so I get over there with a couple of other investigators, and I said, hey, Zach, this is Paul. And he goes, hey, Paul, how you doing? I go, yeah. I said, we're at the National Hotel. I'm in the lobby, but I don't see the camera crew. And he goes, well, Paul, I'm in the lobby too, and I don't see you. I go, what? And I said, what National Hotel are you at? And he goes, I'm at the National Hotel in Nevada City, California. I said, oh, my gosh. I said, the article was about the National Hotel in Jackson, California. And he goes, well, is this one haunted? I go, yeah. I said, I wrote an article about it. He goes, you wrote an article about it? I go, yeah. And he goes, oh, good. And he goes, and I gave him the link to the article. And so I said, do you want us to come up there? And he goes, no. He goes, it's too late because it's like 2 hours away. I said, okay, whatever. And he goes, listen, Paul. He goes, keep my number. If you find anything else, let me know. I go, okay, sure. So I find this place and I investigate it. It's the Ion Hotel. So I call Zach and I go, hey, Zach, this is Paul. And he goes, Paul? I go, yeah, Paul Roberts. We were supposed to do the National Hotel in Jackson. He goes, Paul, can you do me a favor? I go, yeah, sure, Zach. He goes, can you lose my number? I go, oh, man. Yeah. And then when I actually did meet him, oh, my God, he's got such a – he's quite the character. He's very controlling.
I hate stories like that. Like, it bums me out when people that you think are so, you know, they portray themselves one way, and then it's just for TV. It's like, man. And I lived in Hollywood for a while, and I couldn't get out of there quick enough. I hated it. I just felt like nothing was authentic. So have you heard of the spirit box thing that I can't remember?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Have you used that before? Because kids are getting into really dangerous situations with these, and it's becoming like the new Ouija board thing, but apparently it's much more dangerous. It's like leveled up version.
Yeah, we utilize the spirit box, and I mean, you do get all the different radio frequencies and stuff like that. But sometimes what I notice is that people want to hear what they want to hear.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that it'll say something like deer, and they'll hear here. You know, so like, you know, it's like, I'm kind of iffy about that. I'm kind of iffy about the portal because you're using different apps. So there had to be somebody there throwing those words in there. So...
Yeah, I've always wondered about those ones that, like, where they, you know, put the words in there for you. It's like, wait a minute, how did this algorithm put that together? And that's what the, you know, no, like, that doesn't jive with me either, some of that stuff. But
what do you think about the Kinect?
I haven't seen or heard about the Kinect. Describe it to me.
Okay, so basically the concept is, okay, you have this this screen. And you're actually filming things around the house or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And at some point in time, it starts mapping a figure. And that figure, supposedly, is a ghost. And it's a stick figure. And so you see the stick figure moving around, walking around. And supposedly, it's a ghost. So...
This is an app or this is a...
I think they utilize some kind of app, but yeah, a couple of my investigators, they utilize that. And I mean, it's interesting. I'm not really sure how it works, but when the occupants look at it, they, you know, they instantly believe, you know, that possibly could be a ghost, you know. So if I don't see it with my eyes, it's kind of hard for me to believe it. And I've been on over 1,000 investigations, and I've only seen 4 full body apparitions. Only 4. That's so crazy. It's a rarity.
It is a rarity. I don't think people really understand that. They think, you know, they just jump out at you all the time. It's like, no, I've heard many people talk and things, but rarely, you know, do I see a full body, you know, like out of the corner of my eyes sometimes too, I'll see, you know, certain parts of, you know, ghosts or like a, you know, a silhouette, I guess. A sheer kind of silhouette, but yeah, it's rare for me to see a full body ghost. I wonder why that is. Do you think that has to do with the power of like the medium or the person doing the investigating?
Well, they have to muster up the energy to create or manifest into a full body apparition. So energy is a ghost food. Right. So yeah, and that's why when you get an EVP, they're only saying like maybe 3 words at the most, instead of carrying on a full-on conversation. I mean, they like we're doing our podcast. A ghost can't do an hour podcast because they have to muster up the energy just to say 3 words, you know. So,
I also, you know, the recently deceased can't make contact usually because I think maybe they don't know how yet because they're just recently deceased.
Right. They're like probably like in a learning process. Yeah. And I remember like we had one case that was down in Los Angeles and it was a major poltergeist activity. I mean, cabinets were opening and everything else. And come to find out the house was built next to a power line. So the ghosts in that house were feeding off the energy, and that's a lot of energy. Oh, so, yeah, when they moved out of the house, they weren't having that problem anymore. So, yeah.
But a ghost can still follow you too, right? Or, you know,
here's the theory about ghosts. Okay, so let's say I die. Okay, so what happens is, you know, I can go in. I have a choice of either going into the light or not going into the light. I actually have a choice. Mm-hmm. So I say no. I don't want to go into the light. Then what happens is it's sort of like the ghost police. Or maybe they're angels, and the angels goes, okay, well, you're not going to go into the light, then you're sort of stuck in this house. And what happens is there will be like an energy grid that will go around the house, confining the ghost to that house.
Okay.
And as things continue, okay, a lot of people theorize, a lot of parapsychologists theorize, that the reason why they don't want to go into the light is either one, they have strong church beliefs and they feel like they're going to be judged and sent to hell.
All right.
Two, they have unfinished business, so they want to just kind of hang around the house because I'm the grandmother and now I want to watch over my grandchild.
Or they don't know they're dead.
Yeah. And a ghost, okay, so you were saying, can they follow you? Well, I go into the house. Now I'm a living person. I go into the house, and I see this grandmother's diary. Well, the grandmother's dead, but I see this diary, and it's like, wow, this is really cool. I'm taking it home. Can I take this home? Yeah, take it home. Well, her energy is around that diary. She can now follow you home because you're possessing something that she touched, that she held, that was dear to her heart, but now you're the owner of it. Her energy surrounds it, and she can follow you anywhere as long as you have that diary.
Okay, now here's a question for you on that, along those lines. How do some people, you hear about people, you know, getting followed home from the cemetery? Like people will go visit a loved one at a cemetery, and they'll bring something you know, negative back, or unwanted anyway, back with them. How does that happen? Because if they haven't touched anything, you know, there, or, like, I think there was a recent case, I was listening to one of these podcasts that was about this lady who had, and her son was tortured by this ghost who followed them home from, his mom was an investigator. And he knew not to touch anything, you know, not to disturb anything. And he was with her the whole time, but once, you know, somehow followed them home.
Kristen, you know, sometimes I hear stories like that, mm-hmm. but it's like I have to sort of like actually see that and witness it to give you a complete answer on that, because okay. I just, like the cases of that I've investigated mm-hmm. where a person says, well, I didn't take nothing home. Well, come to find out they actually did take something home. And so
maybe they stepped on a person's grave on accident or something and didn't mean
anything.
Yeah.
And even like, okay, you're taking, maybe you got soil in your shoes or your boots or something like that. Perhaps you're taking the energy from a deceased person. You're talking about a cemetery. There's a lot of deceased people there, yeah.
Yep, you're right about that one. That's very true. What about some of these games that these kids are playing now, like the Midnight Man, Three Kings? Have you heard of these?
I haven't really heard of those, no.
Well, Three Kings is like, it's a ritual game, and basically these are old rituals that have been passed down. They're not, and kids are now doing them to, you know, see into things, and bad things are happening. But there's a whole Reddit subreddit called Three Kings about that one game. But it has all the different ones that you can do, and there's different rituals like the Midnight Man. I guess you have to say this kind of prayer, and then you turn all the lights off in your house, and then you lock all the doors, and then you have to avoid this Midnight Man, and you invite him in. I guess you're kind of invoking this spirit or whatever, it's an evil spirit. And then you have to basically elude him for 3 hours. Otherwise, you know, I don't know what happens, but those kinds of things. And the elevator.
You know, this sounds like they're creating a tulpa.
That's true. Oh, I hadn't thought about that. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, like, okay. The author of The Shadow, and you might remember Only the Shadow Knows. Well, it was a character. Anyway, The Shadow, the author thought about The Shadow so much in his mind and constantly writing stories about his character, The Shadow, that his friends and family would visit his apartment and they would see a character dressed all in black, wearing like a trench coat, wearing this fedora hat, and had a big nose, and a red scarf. And they're going, oh my God, we're seeing this entity, this ghost in your house. And he says, you're describing my character, the shadow. How can that even be? And what he was doing, it was manifesting from his mind, and it became written. And just like they say, Slender Man, it was created on the internet, but people are now having real encounters with Slender Man. And Slender Man, is a tulpa.
God, I never thought about that. That's such a great answer. And that sounds completely plausible. The mm-hmm. same thing with those black-eyed kids and whatever, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, wow. So interesting. What about, you know how people say spirits are more active at night. Why do you think that is? Do you think that's even, you know, is that just a fallacy?
Well, being on a thousand investigations, a lot of my investigations are either in the day or at night. I'm finding paranormal activity in broad daylight.
Yeah.
So I think ghosts are 24/7. So, and they're just like people. They used to be people. So they like daylight just like anybody else.
Yep, that makes sense to me too. People always talk about the witching hour, you know, and weird things happening.
Oh, you know, I think is a bunch of malarkey. Because I went to the town of Volcanoville, mm-hmm. and in broad daylight, I get this EVP of Celtic music. Mind you, I cannot hear Celtic music with my ears, but I'm recording it on my recorder. And then I start talking to some of the residents, and finally I talked to a local historian. And back in the old days, back in the 1800s, they would play Celtic music on that particular day. And I was like, wow. So it was like, and that was broad daylight. But of course, that was residual, but that was broad daylight, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's my theory, too. It's like, I've seen apparitions that, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, I don't think they're really discriminatory about that. But
no.
There's that thing about the witching hour, and I've really never got that either. So I wanted to see what your take was on it.
Yeah, if I waited till 3 o'clock in the morning, boy, I would be one exhausted paranormal investigator.
Well, after Paranormal State, though, they always do that dark time or whatever it is. It's always at night. It's always like at 1 o'clock in the morning or something. So
yeah.
I always thought that was funny.
Yeah, well, in fact, our last investigation was at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
In the afternoon. And we got all kinds of evidence.
Now, do you find synchronicities too? Like 1-2-3 or 2-2-2? Like, I know your wife.
Oh. That is definitely my wife. My wife, she has, like the 11-11.
Oh, I have it all the time.
Yeah, 3-3-3. Uh-huh. Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's seen it all the time. Yeah, and then she points it out to me.
I get so used to it now. It's like I can almost not, every time I look at the clock, it's almost always like, and when I don't see it, then I know, okay, I'm not on the right path. I'm doing something that, I shouldn't be doing. It's funny because it's so calming that that's kind of the way my guides talk to me. So,
and both of you have psychic ability, so it may have to do with your psychic awareness, So, that's probably why she's seeing it and why you're seeing it.
Steps, like, let's say one of our listeners is having, an issue in their health. What steps should they take when they have a disturbance? Like, before they call you, is there anything that they should try first? Or what?
Yeah, they can actually self-bless their home. Like, I'll get calls on the paranormal hotline, and I'll say, where are you from? And they said, Ohio. Well, I'm not rich enough where I can just jump on a private airplane and fly to Ohio to help you. But what they said, well, how can I bless my house? And this is the answer that I give them. I said, do you have a Dollar Tree store near you? And they go, yeah. I said, go pick up some angel figurines. And they'll pick up these angel figurines and dip them into holy water. Mm-hmm. And I say a protection prayer over this angel. And place these angels around windows and doorways, openings around your house. Then step in the middle of your house and take command and say a protection prayer. Say, I ask for God's angels, please help me and help my family. Any entities in this home must leave. Any portal in this home must be closed. You're not welcome here. And I said, basically, that's self-blessing your house. And a lot of people will call me back and say, Paul. And I usually get into more detail in this. But anyway, they say, Paul, I did the self-blessing. I got rid of the entities. I go, yes, that's what I'm talking about. So.
Do you guys use
safe? What's that?
Do you use safe?
Yeah, my wife. Oh, my wife, when she makes, smudging wands. Oh, she utilizes everything. Okay, she'll use sage and every type of herb, plant has some kind of mystical property.
Yep, I make my own too. I use mugwort and sometimes white sage, sometimes black sage.
Like she'll use a smudging wand. It has cherry in it. It'll have sage. It'll have walnut. It'll have fig, And if you look up fig or you look up walnut, they all have different mystical properties, and they are all used for different things. And a lot of people think they can just make a smudge wand out of sage. Well, you can utilize all kinds of plants. She was making smudge wands with eucalyptus, and Indians, Native American Indians, were utilizing eucalyptus because of its healing properties. And our eucalyptus smudge wands were so successful, and people were they were calling us, say, "Hey, this really works," you know. Yeah. So
camphor, it's hard to find, but camphor will get rid of anything, almost like any negative energy or entity. It's just gone. It's out of there. I don't know why, but it's like, they bolt when it's, and camphor is that really strong smelling stuff in Vicks vapor rub.
So right.
It's a little strong, but that stuff seems to punch, it packs a kick. And I learned that from a hoodoo practitioner friend of mine, and that stuff works. Like, it's like magical.
And it's so funny. It's like you can go to these mystical shops and spend all kinds of money on a smudging wand made out of sage. When you can walk into your into the wetlands, we have a thing over here called the wetlands, and there's all kinds of eucalyptus trees. You can just start cutting up some eucalyptus, make some smudging wands, and they're very, very, they work very well.
And putting your power into it too. And
absolutely.
That makes it more powerful than just buying it off the shelf,
Right.
From some store. When you're taking the time to make it, that your love goes into it, and it really tends to work better, in my opinion.
And also too, she does her own blessings over the smudge wands and stuff like that. And also too, I want to let you know, okay, we go to many homes, and people are from all religions, and they have all kinds of beliefs. So you have people like Hindu, you have Buddha, you have Catholics, you have Christian, Protestant, you name it. You got, like, I was invited to Kovlo, which is practically an Indian reservation. Well, they have their own Native American beliefs. Well, I've seen some ghost hunting groups where they go into a home and the person's Hindu, and they try to push Christianity on them. That's the wrong thing to do. My wife and I will walk into a Hindu church and learn how they do their own blessings. We'll walk into a Buddha church and learn how they do their blessings. Just because I'm Catholic, I embrace all religions. So I'm willing to help. Yeah, I'm willing to help people out no matter what their beliefs are.
And that's what it's supposed to be about, people that are true light workers and people that are supposed to be, on this, this is part of your path. We're supposed to accept everybody of different race, creed, culture, religions, and embrace that. And I think it goes really far when somebody sees that you take the trouble to learn their rituals and their things that they do in order to help them out. That, that's the extra step. In my opinion, I think that's great that you guys do that. I mean, kudos, seriously. I've heard some bad stories about some paranormal investigators, like the Warrens, the people that were who they are, I'm sure. The Conjuring.
Right.
Yeah, that they're kind of insensitive to people, and they're just sort of come in and boss people around and that kind of way. So I don't know if it's true. I've never met them myself, but I don't know. But so it's good. It's good to hear things like that.
Yeah.
So if one of our listeners is having a sort of instance, would you be able to come out to them? How far do you go? What's kind of the protocol, and how far do you guys travel to help somebody out if they're having a disturbance?
Well, our centerpiece is Sacramento, so we do a 2-hour radius, for driving. We will investigate other places. We you know, we travel internationally, but in a moment's notice, let's say a person calling me from Ohio and they say, hey, I got a ghost in my house. I need you to help me get rid of it. We just don't have the resources to jump on a plane and head over to Ohio to help them. So what I do is I usually refer them to a paranormal group in their state. Okay. And I also give them advice on how to get rid of entities in their home. I had one case I have to tell you about. I had this one case where nothing was working. Okay. They said, okay, I did your wedding to the Dollar Tree store and I got the angel figurines. It didn't work. Okay. And I said, well, what church do you go to? And they go, well, I go to this one Christian church, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, talk to your pastor and get the congregation to go into your house and sing some gospel songs and say some prayers in your home. If it takes 30 people in your house to sing these gospel songs or whatever, I said, it's like a rapper going to a rock concert. Well, he's not going to stay too long because he doesn't like rock music. He likes rap music. So it's the same thing with if he has demons in his house and you got a congregation in there, 30 people singing gospel songs and praying, that demon's going to leave. And sure enough, he got a congregation to go in there. They did that. And he called me back. He goes, Paul, he goes, you're a miracle worker. I said, yeah, why? He goes, it worked. I got the congregation in here. They were singing songs. He goes, it really upset his neighbors because it was so loud. And they were saying prayers. He says, there's not one single demon in that house. I go, there you go.
You said you guys had done some alien investigations. What do you guys work with, MUFON or anything like that, or do you just was it an abduction case? Or, tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, my wife, she was actually abducted as a child, and that's what gave her psychic abilities, and that happened in Auburn, California, and. Just recently, and then we are in touch with MUFON, but recently, this was an amazing thing. So we're going down the street, and this is in Elk Grove where we live at, and she says, Paul, she goes, stop in this parking lot. I go, why? She goes, just go in there. I go, okay. So I go in there, and she goes, there's something in the sky, and she pulls out her camera, and she snaps a photo. Well, in the photo are three discs, three UFOs in disc shaped. And you couldn't see them with your eyes, but she was able to snap a photo of them. And so, anyway, we sent that over to MUFON. Somehow, 14 Times Magazine in England got a hold of it. And we're sitting in Barnes & Noble's, and I like 14 Times because they got a lot of paranormal stories in there. I open it up. I go, oh, my God. And she goes, what? I said, your UFOs, they're in 14 Times. They wrote a big article about it. And I wrote an article on her psychic capabilities of uncloaking UFOs because that's what she did because you couldn't see it with our eyes. And she knew it was there. She sensed it because of her alien abduction as a child. Somehow she's connected to that, took that picture, and boom, three UFOs. And then
what group took her in her abduction? Was it the Greys? Was it Nordic? Did she remember much about it? Did she do a regression?
I think it's the Greys, but I never got into detail on that part on it.
Very interesting. That's, yeah. a lot of psychics have, you know, that, and starseeds have similar abduction stories. So, yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if that is the, you know, the thing that's why some people have psychic gifts, you know, above others, is because of that contact with the higher intelligence.
Right. And also, too, I was a 97 Bravo intelligence analyst in military intelligence in the U.S. Army. And I was stationed in Korea, and I was with the Photo Interpretation Center in Korea. And my job was to work with image interpreters. And we would look at and analyze satellite reconnaissance photographs of things in outer space, but also, too, of things that are happening in North Korea and Red China at the time. Mm-hmm. So one particular day, six photos came in. And this is where I got the word intelligent movement, because on six photos, they represented six videos. And they were taken in outer space. And on the back of the photo, it said intelligent movement. So at that time in 1981 in Korea, even though that Project Blue Book closed down back in the 60s, the military was still investigating UFOs.
They
are
right now.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Changing the names. I mean, it was so interesting how Stephen Greer did that. He did that press conference 2 days before and then 9/11. You know, he did the disclosure press conference, and then two days later, 9/11 happened, and everybody forgot about this huge press conference where he called everybody out on, you know, for hiding aliens. I don't know if you knew about that, but he called everybody out, and it was one of the biggest press conferences held, and nobody remembers it because it was overshadowed by 9/11.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't like to get too into conspiracy theories, but I like a lot of what Dr. Stephen Greer has to say resonates with me a lot.
Right.
He's a very credible person, and he seems like he knows what he's talking about. So, when it comes to aliens. Now, does this affect your health at all, what you do? I mean, is it because I know sometimes energies can be draining, certain entities can be draining, too.
No, but sometimes some of my investigators, they get drained, but, I'm pretty hyped up, because, well, my wife, she likes to create, I like to create. And so I'm curious on what we're going to find at the investigation. Mm-hmm. It's kind of exciting, even though we don't find nothing, it's still exciting. And I enjoy also, too, writing the article about it. So, in looking at the photos and doing the videos, you know, so it's just, that's my creative side. It just gets kind of excited, gets me hyped up. So, I don't get tired. It's like, I might be up till 5 o'clock in the morning working on the article and the pictures and the videos just because it's kind of fun. I like doing it, so...
Same thing. I love what I do too. So it's,
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you because I don't know if you run into this too often, but I've run into it once, and I didn't really know what to say. But what should somebody do if they accidentally disturb like ancient holy grounds, like of, you know, Native Americans, or you know, I guess Native American ones can be, I guess, the most dangerous if you disturb their burial grounds, but at least that's only the ones you hear about, but I'm sure there's all sorts of them. What can they do? What can someone do to sort of make peace with them?
I talked to some Native Americans, and they said if you do something to desecrate some ground or something like that, and you have to basically apologize to the spirit and to offer something to the spirit. And... there was a situation in Covelo where one of the investigators moved a rock, and it wasn't supposed to move. It wasn't supposed to move from point A to point B or something like that. Nothing was supposed to be touched. So he had to come back and say a prayer to their God and had an offering and then buried it, and then everything was at peace. That's basically the kind of ritual that they put them through.
Interesting. It's kind of a personal question, but do you believe in the devil per se, like the devil, you know, as not as a person, but as an actual entity of the evil of all evils? Because I think kind of categorize, oh, the devil's after me, but it's like.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if you really look at a lot of ancient texts, and you read up in the devil, and I know probably people get upset, especially people that are deep into Christianity, but actually, devil, in a way, was sort of a good guy. And
well, he was an angel, you know?
Yeah, he was an angel, yeah. And it seemed like basically he just wanted us to have knowledge just like everybody else, like God did. You know, so he was trying to convince Eve, hey, take a bite of the apple and you're going to gain the knowledge of the God, you know, of God. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the Sumerian texts,
yes,
and with the Anunnaki, everything in the Bible was already written by the Sumerians. And and you have two half-brothers, so you have Enlil and you got Enki. And they're playing the role of God and the devil. And so you got Enlil, and he's the scientist leader. And he says, hey, you know, we're over here mining gold, but our people are getting tired. We need to go ahead and infuse our DNA with these primates on Earth and make a slave race to get this gold.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do that, and that became Homo sapiens. And then the Homo sapiens start multiplying. They were becoming rebellious, and he goes, oh, you know, this is too much. I'm going to destroy them with a flood. Well, that sounds like God right there.
Right.
And then Enki is saying, oh, my gosh, you know, I created these people. I can't let them die in the flood. And so he gathers some people, put them on an ark, and the ark was probably something that carries all the DNA of all the animals in the world. That's how they managed to get all those animals on that ark. And he's playing the role of the devil. So it's like, but he's actually a good guy. So,
I have to say that.
The change was worse than God's, you know, if gods were actually aliens, they didn't know better at the time.
Yeah.